This is STP Lecture 11B, continuing from Side A of this tape.
Oh, too much reality. Now, we can divide our session up, actually, if you want to get real mechanical about it, to all those things which enforced. So we get two grades on this. We would go on the basis of enforced, compulsive, you might say. And we swing this thing many times on compulsive, and then we start swinging it on inhibitive. Compulsive, inhibitive. I should say, actually, this is denied inhibitive. So we start going around here, first on enforced. You've got to love me. You must love me, and so forth. That makes for somebody trying to force affinity through, which will, by the way, have a tendency to charge up the bank. Now, we swing into this, and somebody has continually said to this person, you must understand, you've got to understand, it is true, you must know that it's true, something like that. That's an enforced reality. Now we come over here, and you've got to see it. You know that this is very plain. You've got to see this. You've got to look at it. You've got to listen to it. You've got to feel it. You've got to smell it. You know, any of these things. Enforced communication, in other words. Or you've got to talk. Or you've got to write. Any one of these things. And we just keep swinging it around. Now we select members of the family. We want to break this thing down further. And the first thing, we know that there are four members of this family, Papa, Mama, and two brothers, basically four members. But we know probably that there were some grandparents or relatives, and that there were some nurses on this case. So after we've written down a list of dramatic personnel of the case, we know how many people there are in this case. We've got a list of the dramatic personnel. You can even inventory the dramatic personnel via your preclear. And you do it with this circular system here by saying, all right, we're talking about his elder brother. Now, let's just get this elder brother very thoroughly into view. When did your elder brother used to say that you had to like him? So, well, he never said anything like that. He wouldn't say that. And by actually forcing this a little bit on your preclear, he turns around and he objects to this thing, and he says, why, he used to, he didn't say things like that. He used to say things like that, well, nobody likes me. Absolutely nobody likes me. As a matter of fact, you know, he committed suicide when he was 18. This thing, all of a sudden you realize this man hasn't thought about this or compared this. This is new data, actually, which just was sort of lurking back in his mind. Committed suicide. His elder brother. Somebody in that family had a suicide engram. You mark that down. There's a suicide engram in here someplace. All right. Let's find out what its ramifications are. But here is the trick in all straight memory. Don't super concentrate on any one subject very long. Memory is something which can be darted at a subject, but a continual pressure toward the subject will have a tendency to blunt it a little bit, and it will disperse. In other words, the thing that you're targeting at seems to become alert and start bouncing it off, and you won't get anything out of it. Can you follow me? In other words, if you can make him remember something quickly, you don't ever insist that he remember this quickly, but you say, let's remember this, so on. If we keep him on the same subject, it sort of re-stimulates the subject a little bit, and the subject will begin to turn against the eye slightly. So you change the subject on the person, and you make him remember something else now, and you direct the memory stream at something else, and then you direct it at something else. And after you've done this, you finally come around back to this same subject again. You'll find out that a little more of it is in view, and that a sudden dart at it again. Now, about your brother's suicide, how did he do it? The fellow says, why, it was with a razor blade. Ah, you had it over here in your column. All right. In other words, what else did your brother used to say about liking people? Well, nobody liked him. Nobody liked me. He used to say that all the time. He used to say, everybody's against me, and so on. You. Now you get around here, and you get some reality, and you get a little communication, and so on, and you just keep going around, and then let's come back and find out, well, did your brother say this just before he committed suicide? No, I don't remember that. No, I don't remember that. Well, let's take your younger brother. Now, did he used to try to make you understand things? Do you have any trouble trying to get people to understand things and so forth? Oh, yes, as a matter of fact, he used to go into tantrums. He'd lie on the floor and he'd say, nobody understands me. I just can't do it to anybody. I can't tell anybody about it. Just nobody does. And so on, you get this going and you come back to the thing. Now, what did your brother say just before he committed suicide? He's pretty blue. This girl had just left him. And so on. We have a dramatization in the bank about Papa leaving Mama and somebody committing suicide because of, threatened suicide because of separation between the two. So, we know that Papa and Mama used to fight one way or the other, and they used to come hammering tongs at each other on this subject, but this whole thing may be completely occluded from the pre-clear. He may be telling you all this time, well, you know, my father and my mother, they never fought. They were absolutely model parents in front of children. They never fought in front of children. They never said anything about it, and they were always nice to each other, and they got along so well. Here's this fellow, by the way, with no reality and just that much communication and so forth, and he's telling you that his family life was all a gay song. Oh, yeah. This means that you've got a tremendous amount of occlusion on this case, but you don't tell him he's occluded. You just come around again, and you just keep working at it, chewing away at it. The first thing you know, you have Papa and Mama into view with this very same dramatization. They probably dramatized it later if they dramatized it earlier. That sort of a computation. Now, it so happens that if Papa and Mama died very early, that you get a break in the dramatization pattern. So the dramatizations in late life don't compare to the prenatals. This means your prenatal bank may be relatively undisturbed because it's never been repeated. But it means that there is a tremendous affinity break on this grief and so forth, or apathy, because of the death or loss of Papa and Mama. It doesn't mean this case is in any better shape just because he lost his parents. But it does mean that you're not going to pick up the clues on the prenatal bank that you would pick up ordinarily. But there is broken affinity. The parents may not have died. They may have just left the child. Or the child, for instance, might have been born, Mama left the child with a foster home and then went off and left the child. Now, this will definitely alter a pattern, definitely alter the background. If this happened immediately after birth, the chances of the child's knowing anything about it are very slight. I mean, or it having any enormous effect on him, very slight. But the aberrative pattern, which would be ahead of a child being abandoned immediately after birth, is probably awful. Anybody who gets an adopted child gets a terrific pig in the poke, you might say, because the child was unwanted all during the prenatal period. So you know what sort of a thing to scout for. Unless the parents died by illness or violence, if this child was just pushed out and given away shortly after birth, you can expect all sorts of things. AAs and everything else are on this case. Well, it'd be a little bit tough one to locate until we start to find out what points and periods in the child's life that he was very, in the preclear's life, that he was very unhappy, what sort of thing made him unhappy, that sort of thing. And we still work at it on this circle. This triangle here, we get people who have broken affinity with him and people who have invalidated his reality or enforced realities upon him, people who have communicated with him too hard, people who haven't communicated enough. And we go on this enforced, I was giving you both that time, but we go on remembering all his family members, all the persons in his vicinity, and trying to touch on each one of them with these various things. Enforced. Let's deal with Mama for a short time. Let's go over Mama or the foster mother, whatever it is, and let's find out enforced basis. When did she insist on being loved, or when was she very sad? Remember that affinity doesn't mean just love. When was she very sad? When did she used to be afraid? What did she used to say about these things? And you've got to watch out, and you've just got to be afraid, that sort of thing, because if you aren't afraid, then you wouldn't learn, you wouldn't stay away from these things. I ran that out of a guy once. He's had to be afraid. It made an anxiety case. Up here on the reality line, this is true, you've got to believe it, this is the way the world is, you've got to mind your grown-ups, they know best, elders know best, yap, 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 up here. And believe me, that is really the toughest one in the whole doggone system. That's the toughest of tough social aberrations, because it enforces upon an individual the fact that his elders know best, and so on. And by golly, I have given a great deal of thought and inspection to this subject, and I haven't found it to be true. Now, enforced communication. Are we taking Mama on this one? See, we've gone around the thing here with Mama, and we vary this enough so that he does, that the pre-clear doesn't see a mechanical pattern in this. And but we inventory Mama, you might say, and what she used to do and so on with this. And then let's take up the foster father or the grandparents or somebody, another person in the child's life. Then let's take up his teachers. Let's take up the children, his playmates. Let's take up all this vast horde of humanity that surrounds every human being during his childhood, one by one. Let's take the chauffeur, by one time suddenly assuming that the possibility that this case might have, family might have been in better circumstances, suddenly found out that the family had gone broke and the child was 2 years of age. The child had no recollection of it whatsoever. They'd lived in this enormous, beautiful house, and they had had servants and everything else, and the ally on the case that was burying everything was the chauffeur. Something like a murder mystery, you know. The murder was done by the butler. All right. Now, let's take denied on the same personnel. Try to follow it out to some degree of a pattern so you get full coverage. Denied. Denied tears. Denied apathy. Denied shame. Denied fear. Denied love. Denied unity with the rest of the human race and so forth. Affinity. All right? Reality. It isn't true. It isn't real. You don't know what's true. You don't understand. You don't know the facts. All of that sort of thing. Disagreement. Who used to disagree in this family and say that the other person didn't know? And we get over here in communication. You can't hear anything. You don't know. So on. You can't, you can't feel anything like that. It's all in your imagination, which is a cross up between this one and this one. All right? Denied all the way around. Now you see a mechanical method by which you can use straight memory. You can regain lots of attention units without straining your own imagination. Yes?
When you
it's so bad off that you have to do an awful lot of straight wire in order to get attention units. Don't dive into this case. Let me give you that as a caution. Don't dive into this case. This person, his sense of reality isn't too good and so forth. The second that you get something that looks hot, make a note of it. Be orderly about this. Don't be eager. Just be orderly. Put the person's dramatization that you've just discovered, one of his parents' dramatization, put this down over on the side as something you're going to scout for. Now, shifting from straight memory into reverie. And this is the sort of thing you would then go after in reverie. You don't dive on this case. After all, you're trying. All you're trying to do here, you're getting data, but that isn't the main thing you're trying to do. What you're trying to do is pull attention units up to I and restore I and get the charge off the valences. Now, you will find somebody in the family who had trouble with identity, personal identity. So, we start covering this subject and the people in the family in terms of whose valences were they in. If any of these people were out of valence, or if they did a lot of dramatizing or anything according to that, they were out of valence themselves. Therefore, there existed valence shifters. Now, let's see if we can find out what these valence shifters are. So we go into the various lineups and so forth. Did anybody try to make you a better boy? Yes. Well, who did they set up as a model for you? Oh, that was Herman down the block. I hated him. Well, what they used to tell you about Herman? Oh, he's a little gentleman and had nice manners, and my mother used to tell me this all the time. You follow this track right on down to Mama had identity trouble. She had identity trouble in herself, and she's got a dramatization there that tries to make her change the identity of other people around her. You've spotted then a shifted valence personality in the vicinity you're preclear. Mama, okay? So we look at Mama, and we find out when Mama said to Papa who she wanted Papa to be like, and who she wanted Grandpa to be like, and who she wanted the other children to be like. And finally, we'll pick up enough data on this and stimulate the memory of a person to a point where you will actually have valence shifter dramatizations coming into view with whole word content. See how that would be? Now you've got the valence shifter dramatization. You've got to be like other people. You can't go on thinking you really amount to something in the world. You've got to buckle down to your job, and you've got to be like other people. You've got to live like other people, and so on. Well, that would be a valence shifter in the all sorts of valences, and you finally spot this. Now, mind you, that each one of these locks is a lock because it's buried into the charge, overall charge, which has come up from the engram and the secondary engrams. But just by springing off a lock off the top of this chain, one, to some degree, de-intensifies the charge on that thing. So we can go round and round. Now, the second part of the mechanical operation here has to do with the first, second, third, and fourth. Guess what? All right. Here's your one for each one. Follow away. Let's just cover these subjects. Who used to talk about not liking yourself? First dynamic. Who used to say that you were nobody? That'd be a valence shifter in it. A nullification. Who used to tell you shouldn't listen to your own advice, or you should listen to your own advice, and so forth. In other words, these cockeyed little split-offs. They're all inhibitive on the first dynamic. We get the second dynamic. Let's start being interested now in the second dynamic, and we're interested in that in two divisions, remember. There are two divisions on the second dynamic. One is sex as an act, and the other is children. Now, so we can handle sex. The reason sex gets so mixed up is it gets mixed up with the family, which is actually over here, but it's partly in the second. And it has two divisions, which has to do with sex act and children, and it's the family, and it's this whole dynamic of the future. And the reason why people sometimes go hog wild and think sex is the super, super, super aberrative something or other in the society is just because it's apparently a little bit stronger than some of these other combinations. But I've seen whole societies that never worried that long about sex. And so you want to cover this. Now, it's interesting, for instance, that the recovery of data on the second dynamic is actually no more significant than the others if you're treating just sex. You find all sorts of locks and secondary engrams on the subject of sex on a case, and you start asking about it. Now, you're not so fascinated with this person's own sexual behavior aberrations, but you're interested in the sexual aberrations behavior of the people around this person. The only time you get interested in a person's own dramatization is when all else fails. What does he say? What does he do? Because if it's an aberrated conduct, or an aberrated statements, he got them from somebody else, and it will clue you into somebody else's actions in the bank. All right? An interesting clue on this is getting the dictated affinity communication reality on children. How do they feel about children? How should you treat a child? So on. Now, you go on the basis of this, you just follow it around. Should children be seen and not heard? An English private school or an American private school system or something of the sort, you'll find a lot of sex louse up on the case. And you just play one of these things against the other, back and forth, rolling the three around until finally you've gotten a lot into view on the thing. You're unburdening a case. You're taking charge off the case. You're looking for secondary engrams. You're looking for dramatizations. You're looking for circuits. You're looking for data. You're trying to get everybody in this case into view. You're trying to knock out all the occlusions. And if you keep it up in this fashion, I would safely say that without ever putting anybody into reverie, you finally knock most of the occlusion off of a case. You probably knock it all off just by going through this routine. Now, on the third dynamic, how do you feel about people? How do you feel about the Elks Club? How do you feel about the government? How do you feel about this, that, so on? But affinity, communication, reality on these things. Do you think government's good for people? Who in your family used to think that government was awfully bad for people, and so forth? Highly generalized statement. Do you think a government really exists to help the people, so on? Who used to be very hot on this subject around you, and so on? This is an odd tack. It would certainly sound offhand as though this couldn't possibly contain very much in the way of charge, but you'd be amazed. The group is terrifically important, and these so-called governments that are in the world today they have affinity with or a broken affinity with their own people and with individuals so often, and it actually exists on cases in form of charge. For instance, you might say on one single point, you'd almost never get one single point that's terribly important, but this point resolved a young vet's case. He was in an apathy, and he couldn't get up the scale at all. I got him up to grief, pulled him up by his bootstraps, and got him up to a point where he could get rid of this. He had been hammered into an apathy. He had lost both legs in the war. And the government had, he was an officer, and the government had said that he should go over to the Veterans Administration, and there's where he should collect his compensation. And his family was so alarmed at taking care of a cripple that everything hit him simultaneously, but the family didn't have an awful effect upon him because they'd always been ornery to him, and he'd never been close to any of these people. He was quite a stranger to them all his life. But he had always believed thoroughly and patriotically in the government. And here he had given his very best, and the government had told him, well, we're not going to retire you as an officer so that you can get three-quarters of your base pay and live like a gentleman the rest of your life. No, we're not going to retire you as an officer. We're not going to fix you up. We're going to push you over here and just let you starve. We're going to give you something like 30% disability. And maybe in a couple of years, if you pass all of the examinations and everything else, you're going to get something like that. And this case had just gone boom right at that moment. I tried to unburden it from the family. No, didn't have an awful big bearing on it. Person had been raised in another environment than his own family. But when it came to the government and the Veterans Administration and everything else, this thing had laid a secondary engram on the case, complicated by such things as the government wouldn't answer his mail, wouldn't answer his letters. They would force him to go through channel someplace else. You see, that's a compulsion, a communication. He had to communicate with somebody else, and he had to do this over here with somebody else, and he had to do this, and he had to do that. And he had to see this person, and he had to see that person. And they kept him going around in circles for weeks, and then all of a sudden, he just had collected enough material, so the final blunt statement, no, we're not going to retire you, was enough to send him completely into an apathy. Boom. Laid in a secondary engram. Well, it got some of the attention units out of the earlier part of this fight, and then all of a sudden ran in to his receipt of a letter on the thing, and ran that out. It was a secondary engram. Actually discharged got the apathy off, but discharged some grief off the thing, and we came up to a point where he could pick up his fear of facing his environment. Picked up a lot of these points out of people who had surrounded him all of his life. Fear of the society, fear of self, fear of sex, fear of children, fear of this, fear of that. Picked these things up, but particularly over here on the third dynamic, and we were actually practically in this case selectively rehabilitating one dynamic, picked up fear of not being able to measure up in the society anymore, and that sort of thing, and his case came up to a point where it darn near ran pianola. It was very easy. Now, if you can pick up one of these dynamics, you have picked up to some degree the possibilities on the others. If you could rehabilitate one of these dynamics, if you could rehabilitate mankind, certain religions lie squarely across the fourth dynamic. Man is evil, therefore we have to make him good. It's a computation. Various religions lie across this line, and there's enormous amounts of things lie across it. If you've ever run into anybody, for instance, I've seen some women who, at one time or another, who did this. If human beings only acted so nice as cats, if they only acted like these dear little animals, evidently they'd never seen Kitty out there knocking off a bluebird. And that making this up, that man is no good. Now, the odd part of this, men are no good. Women are no good. Women are all alike. Men are all alike. So forth. That's a block up here on this dynamic. So, we have to start picking up affinity, communication, reality, enforcements. You've got to like, got to agree with people. That sort of thing, you see. And, you shouldn't pay any attention to people. You should never listen to them, and so on. This sort of material will form locks on this one. So, let's go then on the basis of you've got a number of tools now that you can use. You've got affinity, reality, communication for the family, for any one of the dynamics, not only for any member of the family, but for any of the dramatic personnel in a person's life. Don't overlook the marital partner as a source, for instance, of aberration or re-stimulation. So we got reality communication on any of the personnel in a person's life for any one of the dynamics. And you follow it out. Let's take them selectively, person by person, and by keeping notes on these various people, we will really get to know their aberrative pattern. We're inventorying the people in the person's life. And looking out what these people consisted of. There are two motives to this. One is to get back attention units, locate secondary engrams, discharge, in other words, some of the charge on this case. And the other is to get data to use in locating some of the engrams which must be in order to resolve the case. By removing the charge and by removing some of the circuits, by removing some of the valence shifters, we will finally get the case in tensified state that it can run engrams with conviction, and we can then resolve the case along a pianola line. Now, you understand this system, that you can run affinity, communicate, locks and engrams out of the person by straight wire, and when you put him in reverie, you can run these things out, secondary engrams and the locks. You can run the lock out in reverie, just as though it's an engram. And you can run the secondary engram out in reverie, or you can knock them out by straight wire. You can, that doesn't mean that you're going to discharge all the grief off of the grief engram or a bad secondary engram. You're never going to be able to discharge one of those things by straight wire. It's got to be in rock, you understand. But just by springing these things into view, there's a little material that springs into sight. There's some attention units start coming back to eye. The case starts to discharge. Reality will pick up. That's how you get a tough case into shape. All right. I haven't given you perhaps the examples of case after case on which this sort of thing exists, but I have given you a few days ago an accessibility chart, and I'm going to draft up this accessibility chart, which is sure I'll finish this, and give you the accessibility chart and this code of breaks and secondary engrams. That, and you'll be able to use the two of them as a guide which locks in with standard procedure, and you've got more tools than you had before. That is to say, they're better. Of course, they aren't more tools, they're just better understood, I hope, of attempted control and force value. In other words, there's lots of mess in these engrams. Now, you see now the how the problem integrates, what I've been talking about the last couple of days to you. Starts to break down to something very useful. Number one on standard procedure, accessibility. How do you increase this accessibility, and how accessible should a person be to run engrams? And right here, pay very particular attention to this. You should understand how inaccessible cases really are. You understand it's a gain if you can get this person to answer a question. If he can answer a question and remember something about his own past, oh, that's a pretty big step. If you can get him to actually contact a pleasure with his eyes closed, or contact anything with his eyes closed, Big gain there. Now, if you can get him to move down the track and contact his past, it's a big gain. But don't think that the person is accessible yet until he can run an engram with all 26 perceptic in valence. The person at that moment is accessible. There are darn few people who are. That's now the problem we're going into here is the problem of the normal person. You know, the normal person. Yeah. Now, the standard procedure up there tests for accessible cases. Actually, no threshold has been considered at the time that was written. I never wrote that on there, by the way. No threshold was considered. What is the threshold of accessibility? And the threshold of accessibility is just that I told you just then. This person is accessible, you might say, to run engrams. Accessible to run engrams when he can run them with all 26 perceptics in his own valence system, doing fine. Of course, he couldn't run them with 26 perceptics out of valence. So, when he can run the engrams in that fashion, then he is accessible for running engrams. Earlier than that, he is accessible for repairing breaks on communication, affinity, and reality. Earlier than that, he's accessible for being talked to. Earlier than that, he is accessible for being looked at. Now, you wouldn't consider that that had anything to do with accessibility offhand, would you? It's awfully hard to audit somebody who's running so fast you can't catch him. So, problem of accessibility is a problem of degrees of. But let me point up that last degree there. That is the pianola case, the case that plays itself. That is what a pianola case is. Able to run engrams with all 26 perceptives. And you keep patching up and repairing and taking circuitry out of this case until such time as it will do that, and then you run engrams. Unless you actually can get charge off of the case. But again, you're really dealing in terms with accessibility to run engrams, but you can sometimes have to run engrams with the person out of valence, more or less, because they're pretty jammed up there, so on. But it's not a good thing to do. You can get tension off the line. You've regained a few attention units and so on, but you haven't fixed up that case yet. When you start to take circuitry out of the case, for instance, you'll very often run engrams with high line charge, very intense, with the preclear out of valence. You'll run the charge off of these things. You'll try to get him into his own valence. Try to get him back down the track to the earliest time this circuitry appeared. Try to do all of these things. Don't think you're really running engrams off of this case to the degree and magnitude that you should. You don't start an erasure on this case when it's doing that. That is just the beginning. Anybody, for instance, who goes down into the basic area and starts to run out in a routine fashion engrams on a person who is consistently and continually out of balance, whose sense of reality is very poor, whose affinity is very bad, and is running them more or less, a person gets some kind of a vague impression that something might be happening, but he isn't quite sure, and so forth, and who the auditor who will go along and run that case that way is going to be very confounded. He is going to be a very confused auditor before long, because he's going to find the darned engrams seem to reappear. Of course, they never went anyplace. He's going to find that the person's valences are all messed up. He's going to start getting unconsciousness, by the way, after a person's been run that way long enough, unconsciousness will start to come off on every moment of the past. In other words, you send him to yesterday when he was wide awake, and you run him through a moment of yesterday, and unconsciousness will start to come off. Why? It's because you've re-stimulated unconsciousness on this case to such a degree that it's just loaded with it. And it just comes off any place. It's an interesting thing, but that would be thoroughly bad auditing. It means that the auditor has attempted to pronounce a case pianola and run it long, long, long before he should have. He has abandoned the job of taking off painful emotion, communication invalidations, and reality breaks He's abandoned this job long before he should have abandoned it. He has just kicked all that out, and he said, well, there's no reason to go after these things. There's no reason to get any circuits off the case. There's no reason to do it. We'll just run engrams. And you'll find out that something that somewhat like a file clerk will work with you, and a somatic strip will work with you, and you can get the guy to move on the track, and you can get him to run out of valence, maybe. Very, very low sense of reality. Very, very poor communication with his own engrams. You go on and run that case, and you'll find the engrams, I repeat, reappearing. Of course, they never disappeared. And you will find all sorts of strange things happening to this case. And when that is occurring, it means simply that the auditor pronounced the case accessible long before it was. Well, that's what we mean by accessibility, and that's what we're trying to attempt. There's your first step, your first major step, is determining the accessibility of the case and repairing the accessibility and increasing the accessibility up to a point where it can run engrams, physical pain engrams in the basic area with all 26 perceptics on. And you keep working at this case until you can do it. And you don't do anything to this case which keeps the case from doing it. And the first thing you know, your case will be running fine. This is standard procedure. Now, we're going to cover all this in detail. I have to take a rather wide look at it today for you to cover this problem of accessibility, show you how to patch up and put together the affinities, the communication abilities, and the reality conceptions of the individual. You do it. The tools with which you do this, we'll cover later. But I point out that these things have to be done. And you have to get out the circuits. And you have to get the person his own valence. You have to work with this case, sometimes a long, long while. And I wouldn't really call a case open until it would run an engram in the basic area with all 26 perceptics on. That case I would call open. Not is he, well, we can get this guy to move on the track. His case is open. Not we can run an engram way out of valence. And not we can run some kind of a grief discharge or something on this person. He's crying his mother's tears, of course, but he's at least crying. That would not be an open case. The case is open, you might say, actually under two conditions. When a major portion of the grief is off of the case, you might say, you could say, well, the case is open. Or when you got the central grief engram off of the case, yes, you could say the case is open. Or when the case would run basic area engrams with all 26 perceptics on, then the case is really open, because it says immediately that you must have gotten some grief off of it. And it says immediately that you must have repaired these vectors of communication, affinity, and reality. All right, now we have walked that far in the standard procedure. And I leave you to ponder, those of you who have done a great deal of auditing, upon your sins. Thank you.